Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Lord Onyx, and all the hosts 7 nights a week for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio. To Lord Terry's Power Hour, our show where we create our own reality. Thanks for joining us. So, pull up a chair and enjoy the adventure. And now, here's Lord Terry.
And good evening, everybody. Good afternoon, good morning, good wherever in the world you are. We are excited that you are with us. This is Reverend Terry Power, and this is the Power Hour. So, go ahead and pull up a chair, get settled in. We're going to be joined tonight by becoming more and more regular co-hosts here on the Power Hours. My lady, Robin, how are you tonight?
Hi, I'm here. I'm doing well.
Coolness. So, if I sound a little snuffly tonight, I apologize. I was up on a roof doing my day job until into the late afternoon, early evening, and so. It was quite breezy up there and has got me a little snuffly, so I apologize on the front end. I want to welcome everybody that is with us tonight, our guests. See some new faces and there are new names in the chat room. And we saw somebody in there as guest. Now, I do want to say, if you log in and you can listen without participating in the chat room. You can listen in a lot of ways, from iTunes to, we'll play a business cut here in a few minutes at the bottom of the hour. But it's got a whole lot of different ways that you can be listening. But if you're not in the chat room, logged in directly to Blog Talk Radio, you're really missing a good bit of the show. Very often it stays on topic, and sometimes it goes on a tangent. So you really are missing something if you're not part of the chat room. And you can go to Blog Talk Radio, get a free account, cost you nothing. They don't harass you with emails or anything like that. So it's pretty cool. And let's see, tonight we are going to be talking about effective ritual construction. And Robin has graciously agreed to share this one with me. We got a question last Thursday night. Robin and I are now doing the Thursday night question and answer show under a shady tree. And we had some questions about ritual, and it kind of took on a life of its own. It looked like there was more information than we could really provide in the time given. So we decided to do a whole show on it. And here we are. Now, we do rituals every Sabbath and every full moon here on the Power Hours. And Robin and I have individually been doing ritual for over 20 years each. And conducting group rituals, I think she's done some bigger group rituals than I have. But I've certainly done my share of festival rituals. So we thought we would get together tonight and share some ideas, everything from personal individual ritual, maybe a small group like a family or a few friends, a coven or temple or shrine or whatever you call your grove, whatever you call your larger collective working group. And then you've got more, the open rituals that you might do at a pagan pride or something that's got a relatively small number, but it's larger than your working group. And then the huge 150 or so people in a circle kind of rituals. And so we're just going to take that, and I think my lady had a kind of an outline of a ritual, and then we're going to take each of these elements and expand on them and take it in its turn from smallest to largest.
Yep, we can do that. generally, there are, three situations in which you're going to be doing ritual. You're either going to be doing it alone as a solitary. You're going to be doing it, as Terry said, in a group or a coven. And those two things are actually not exactly the same either, because sometimes it could be a working group or just a group of friends who come together, which differs slightly from a consistent working coven that works together all the time, and they all work in the same format, and it's slightly different. And then we have, like he said, the open or public rituals. They all follow a basic format. Everybody knows the basic format. You cast circle, and then you call your quarters. And once you've called the quarters, you can call other things like ancestors or spirit. Some people call chaos. Some people don't. You can call all of those, none of those. But that's sort of the variable. And then you're going to call your god and your goddess. Either, calling to your specific god and goddess that you're working with, or calling to a more generalized god and goddess in a larger ritual, depending on your focus for that ritual and how you've decided to do it. After you've called the gods, and there's a difference here as well when you're calling the gods, whether you're going to invoke them, which means drawing them down into yourself as high priestess and high priest, or whether you're going to just ask them to join you, which is evoking, asking them to be in circle with you, have their energy present in the circle. So there's a huge difference there. And then once you've done that, you're going to have some sort of energy working. You're going to do some sort of work there. A lot of things, like in public ritual, will be, working for the good of the earth, or a healing for somebody in the community who's sick. But it runs the gamut of what you might do. And
for personal, private ritual, it could be something as simple as a meditation or a journal.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we're going to talk about all these differences as we go through. And then, once you've done your energy work, you can sometimes give people in the circle a chance to talk about, what's their community doing, what events are coming up. Share knowledge, share information, exchange ideas. And then usually you're going to shut down your circle at that point and reverse order. You're going to, devoke, if you will, the gods, the god and goddess, and the anything that you may have called your ancestors, your spirit, your chaos, and then the elements, and open the circle. So that's your basic format for most rituals. Now, the things that really change here are when you're talking about the number of people. Solitary ritual is usually, and some people are going to have cakes and ale, you know, after ritual or at the end of ritual. Some people pass it around as at the end, you know, may you never hunger, may you never thirst, sort of thing. And then some people, after ritual is open, they have their feast together.
And that's also a good place to do announcements if you're going to have, like, community announcements or announcements for the group or anything like that.
Well, one of the reasons that I am a proponent of having it done in circle after the energy working is that kind of gives people, it brings them back to the to now and the reality, and it gives people a chance to talk about those things with everybody still standing in circle and hopefully paying attention. Because honestly, once you start passing the food around in a large group, nobody's listening to what anybody says because everybody wants their cakes and ale. And that's just from an observation of experience. In a coven, it would work to do it, after the fact. But if you've got 100 people, forget it. It's they're eating, they're chatting, they're talking, they're not paying attention to anything else that's going on at that point. And you want people who have community events coming up to really be able to reach everybody because they're working hard at putting on those events. And that's been my experience anyway.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about personal, private, individual, solitary ritual. Now, the elements are all the same.
Yes.
It's just you got to do all the work.
Yeah. Well, I have found that with personal and private rituals, when you call the elements, north, south, east, west, you can, depending on where you are, you can mix them up. You know, if you're in Australia, you're going to call fire as north. If you're standing on the east coast of New Jersey looking at the ocean to your east, you're certainly not going to call east as air. You're going to call east as water. And so in your personal rituals, you may want to align yourself more closely with your environment and the working that you're doing. I mean, I've actually done rituals where I have only called one element and actually worked with that element in that circle and sort of a getting to know you kind of exercise. But that's part of the my coven teachings. So there are lots of kind of different varying things that you can do in a solitary ritual that you might not take to a group. And I truly believe that people who, even if you're in a coven, even if you belong to a large group, you still need to be doing solitary ritual for yourself on a regular basis because it gives you time to reevaluate what's going on inside and process and what's happening on your spiritual path and in your life and process.
So many people use group ritual as a replacement.
Yeah.
And it certainly should not ever be a replacement for personal, private, individual relationship with the divine.
Mm-hmm.
This is this solitary ritual that we each do. Even Robin and I, doing ritual together as a family, still have our private time.
Oh, sure.
We have our distinct and individual relationships with the divine and the aspects of the God and the goddess that we work with. And some of them are different. So it is important that everyone spend time developing that personal relationship with the divine, like whatever name you call, whatever aspect, manifestation of the divine, whatever god and goddess and or that you choose to work with, you've got to develop a relationship. You can't just call them in a group circle and expect that you're going to have any relationship. It just doesn't work that way. If you want a friendship, you've got to develop it. So
exactly.
You know, this is the building block for everything that we do going forward.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And if you don't create that relationship with your gods and with your and with the elements, you might as well just be singing a song out in your yard at night, and you'll probably get just as much out of it.
Yeah, and you just become part of the choir at group.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not bringing anything to it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've already hit on, while you do flip east and west, because that's, so much time in Jersey.
Right. For 10 years I did open ritual on the beach, so I couldn't I couldn't face the ocean and call air. It wasn't happening.
And, when I've lived on the ocean, I've lived on the west coast, so the water was in the west. So I've never really felt that compunction to change. And when we do ritual together, we talk about it beforehand, what we're going to do with that.
Right.
But when you start working with a group, then you have to get something a little more, consistent and standardized. But let's touch on private working. During a solitary experience, you might do something like journey work or meditation to do that, to develop and work on that connection with the elements,
mm-hmm.
With the elemental energies, with the god and the goddess. Spend that time working together, working together with the divine, mm-hmm. to develop that those skills and that relationship. You might also do a healing or create an object. You might do poppet magic. Whatever it is that you want to do, you can do that very easily in a solitary ritual, and it involves your own concentration, your own focusing of the energies that you call into yourself or channel through yourself. Now, I haven't used energy from myself in so long,
mm-hmm.
because I channel.
Right.
I just open myself and I direct the divine energy without depleting my own. And that's a practice that comes from a lot of solitary work.
Right, exactly. And I was just going to make that point. That's not something that really you can develop until you have done a lot of this inner journey work, this inner search, and opening yourself to the gods and communing with them, invoking them, so that you can gain that experience and that knowledge in order to be able to do that on a regular basis.
And let's see. Now, there was a question in the chat room about when would you choose evocation or invocation? When would you actually draw down? Now, I wouldn't think that for personal work you would need to do that much in the way of drawing down, because you're going to do some kind of connection, kind of work. Drawing down would be more of a group setting, particularly when you're being the high priest or the high priestess.
Well, I don't know about that. We're gonna have a divergent conversation here. Usually, when you are, let's say, wanting to create a relationship with a specific god or goddess, you're going to build your relationship with them to the point in a solitary ritual over time. And I don't say you're going to do this, let's see, I'm going to work with Kali and I'm going to call Kali, I'm going to invoke Kali tonight. No. What you're going to do is you're going to get to know that goddess. You're going to build a shrine. There's a whole process for that goddess. You're going to do your research. You're going to find out what they, where they fit into your life. And once you feel confident that you know as much about that goddess or god as possible, at that point, I think a really great way to commune with that goddess and honor them is to invoke them and, allow them to come into you and give you whatever message they are trying to give you. I know that recently, Terry, you've had this sort of interaction with Shiva where he's sort of tapped you on the shoulder and gone, hey, you, And so,
yeah, but I've not invoked Shiva yet.
Not yet.
The invocation work I typically do ends up being a foreign god. Sometimes mm-hmm. not. Sometimes I'm not even asking.
Oh yeah, this is true. but at some point you may want to do that as a to solidify the relationship, to explore that God's energy up close and personal. Most of the drawing down that I have done early on, I did in solitary ritual. This is not, though, something that I would recommend anybody who's a novice to do. I mean, if you haven't been working your solitary path for at least 5 or 6 years, I don't think you should be drawing down. I used to tell all my students, people who would approach me, oh, will you teach me? Will you teach me? Okay, you know, how long have you been working as a solitary? Oh, I don't know, a year? Okay, come back in 4 years. 5 years of solitary work to really get to... First rule of being a witch, know thyself. Got to get to know yourself. And all too often today, people are not willing to do that. There are, you know, trads where all you have to do is show up for a couple of meetings and you're in, you know. And that kind of irritates me. And not because I think it's like, you know, insta-witch. I really don't have a problem with people who are very self-aware and working on themselves, wanting to dedicate to a tradition. But they should know that there's going to be some time there they're going to have to spend on themselves. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that absolutely has to take place, and that takes place in solitary ritual.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's take it a baby step forward,
mm-hmm.
and let's talk about family ritual, because this gets neglected a lot. And, you know, we want to do our stuff, and we end up usually doing it after the kids are in bed or whatever, and... I feel like, you know, sometimes there's work that needs to be done. Like, you're not going to do an invocation usually with the children present. But sometimes something as simple as saying grace before a meal,
mm-hmm.
Or doing a small family ritual at the Sabbath, maybe with a feast, and, you know, doing a little ritual just to honor the god and goddess during the Sabbath, and do it with the family so that the kids begin to understand and participate. And, you know, then they can be ready when it's their time to enter the coven or shrine or temple or mm-hmm. grove or whatever name you use for your groups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go ahead.
One of the brilliant things that organized religions do that we as pagans tend to neglect because we are so, you know, not organized, is they bring their children up in their traditions. They don't let their kids get to be, you know, 21 before they figure it all out for themselves. They bring their kids up in their traditions. They go to rituals at church. They go to church functions. They go to synagogue and learn stuff about their spiritual tradition. You know, Catholics have, you know, communions and all kinds of other things that their kids go through. So we don't really, as a whole, in general, follow that same sort of course. So I really do believe that there should be family rituals where kids learn things and have, you know, everyday things that they do, like we were talking about, you know, family prayer over a meal. And I know for some people that's too knee-jerky Christian. You know, I'm not going to do that because, you know, growing up we always had to do that and I hated it and I hated it when it was my turn to pray. But we really need to
Perry
get over all that. Excuse me, honey?
Perry looks forward to that.
Yes, she does. And actually now when she goes to other people's houses, if they don't say something before dinner, she comes home and she's like, Mom, they didn't say anything before dinner. They didn't thank the gods for their food. So, yeah. And so she recognizes, she recognizes how important that has become to her. And, you know, I just took a class at the pagan gathering with the Gramasis, and Raven was talking about plants and how they have feelings, and they've proven this scientifically now. So even if you're a vegetarian, you know, you should be thanking the plant for giving you its energy and its life. Same thing for, you know, meats and whatnot. You know, something somewhere, somebody had to prepare that. The animal or vegetable gave its life so that you could have sustenance and you could eat, and you should be appreciative of that and thank the gods for the bounty. That is a ritual.
Okay, ritual. I'll comment in the chat room. Yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry. I want to
rituals are not just the full-blown casting circle stuff. You know, rituals are also these small things that we sometimes don't think of. You know, the little prayers that you say to yourself, like before you get in the car, okay, you know, or you're driving through the parking lot looking for a parking spot. You know, these little things that we do are also small mini rituals on our daily basis that comfort us and give us hope.
Yeah. Now, there's a comment in the chat room from Seasider that says it's hard to follow that same type of course because of the lack of solid buildings and such structure, traditions. And I'm going to say that perhaps that is true, but perhaps we need to change it. As much as most pagans reject the idea of an organized tradition, it is important, and that's from Seasider as well. And yeah, I think it is important. I think if we don't do it, if we don't do it on a larger level, I mean, if we just have the children, you know, in our influence. The children up on the mountain, we're teaching them, you know? I mean, we give them a little bit so they can understand it. Go ahead. You got something. Go.
Yep. May I remind everybody that when Jesus started, he was wandering through the desert teaching people his spiritual tradition. He had no church. And what did he say to me? Suffer the little children, come unto me, right? He was smart enough to know if you let him teach the children, that they would grow up in the tradition and they would spread it. He was really a brilliant marketer. He knew who to market to. And you know, I'm not trying to put this in and give it a commercial spin, but the fact is that, you know, unless we talk to our kids about what we're doing and we include them, they're never going to know. It's, you know, I don't think this is something we should hide from our children. And believe me, I live in a town, a little itty-bitty town in Pennsylvania, where most people who are pagan keep it to themselves because they don't want everybody to know, because it could impact your kid when they go to school. There are a lot of very religious people, very Christian people in this area, very old-fashioned values. But I really have taught Persephone to be herself, and if people ask, never to lie and to be honest about what she believes. And so far, she's 9. So far, so good. Nobody has really made a big deal about it.
Yeah, I don't know that even in that little community there where we live, we don't have. I just don't think anybody's going to give her any real trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
Because more and more, and of course, I've been told that Pennsylvania is one of the most open, religiously open states.
Oh yeah.
Comparatively speaking, and of course, you got to remember I grew up in the South. But the South is remarkably open, too. I've never really had any great difficulty, and I've lived an openly Wiccan life for, you know, 16, 17 years now. And I generally don't have any trouble. You know, there's one or two people, there's somebody at work that doesn't like my ring, and so I'm still there, she's still there. Most of the people at work, they'll ask me questions when they see something in the news about paganism or Wicca. They'll come and ask me questions because, you know, I'm just a coworker who is pagan.
Mm-hmm.
know, I'm not the pagan who is a coworker. I'm the coworker who is pagan, which is very cool when you listen to the way that's worded. And that's probably another, you know, whole topic for a show as well. In fact, I think I've done that once or twice. But anyway, we are at the bottom of the hour, and while we're taking a breath, let's go ahead and jump on a song.
Okay.
Good friend of yours, in fact, is the lead singer for Music for the Goddess. And she has graciously given us permission to play their music. They've recently come on the switchboard here. And we're going to play Round and Round in honor of our discussion about ritual. And this is by Music for the Goddess. We'll be back here in a few minutes. Stick around, listen to a song and some business and, you know, all that kind of fun stuff. We'll be right back.
Yeah. You are listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, where we believe that all manifestations of the divine are valid. You had a choice, and you chose to spend time with us. Join us nightly at 10 p.m. Eastern Time for a wide variety of programming. If you miss one of our shows, there are plenty of places to catch up. Every show is archived at www.blogtalkradio.com/CERN. Look for the on-demand shows. They are available as a free podcast download on iTunes and now available free on the TuneIn Radio application and website. Follow us on Twitter at SURN_ORG and on Facebook. Each of our shows has a Facebook presence so that you can keep abreast with what is going on. If you have any moans, groans, gripes, bitches, complaints, or compliments, you may send those to the station management by emailing surn.org@gmail.com. On Thursday nights, Onyx and Terry discuss questions that have been sent in by you, the listeners. If you have a question you want them to discuss, please send it to the station's email address. If you'd like credit for the question, please let us know in the email. For more information about our network, please click over to www.spiritualunityradionetwork.org. Your support is greatly appreciated, and we humbly thank you for that.
One power in the universe, and we are perfect manifestations of that power.
And as such, we pray. We pray for peace. We pray for love. We pray for stability. We pray for the nation in which we live. We pray for the world.
We will it. We manifest it. We draw it to us. We receive it. We accept it, and we give thanks for it. And by our will, so mote it be.
To Lord Terry's Power Hour on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We're glad you're here. And now, back to Lord Terry.
And welcome back, everybody. This is Reverend Terry Power. This is the Power Hours, and my special, becoming more and more regular co-host, Robin. How you doing, Don?
Hi, good. I'm good.
A couple of points of business. We're still working on redoing some of the voice work. The Thursday night show that is mentioned in that business, station business little cut that we just did, talks about Terry and Onyx doing questions and answers on Thursday night. So that is now Terry and Robin doing the Thursday night question and answers. You can still send stuff to the same email address, or you can get in touch with us directly at littlestonebridge@gmail.com. So let's see. Before the break, we were talking about solitary ritual. Well, first we talked about ritual elements. Then we talked about solitary ritual. We started getting into family ritual and teaching our kids. And you know, sometimes also that has the benefit of bringing a couple closer together, even if there's no children involved.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there are children, it creates family where there were a bunch of people living in a house together.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we always talk about when couples need to communicate and the things that they do together as a couple, it's sort of creating their sacred space, their sacred temple is the thing that you and I always talk about in our couple
right.
counseling.
Yeah,
and our workshops, yeah. And so now you're creating a family temple, that family sacred space where people can say anything and talk about whatever's on their mind without fear of being blamed or yelled at or, you know, lots of histrionics. But it really is so important to have that as a family, I mean, as a couple, and then also as a family. Because sometimes kids have things on their mind and they're afraid to voice them. And they can be silly things, but they need to talk about them. Not that long ago, I had a neighbor kid here who he has a little brother who's a couple years old, and he's, you know, 7 or 8. And he was having problems in school, and he's acting out, and he's, you know, not doing as well as he used to. And he just blurted it out to me one day on the couch because we were sitting quietly, and I was reading to him. And all of a sudden, he blurted it out to me, everything that had been on his mind about how his family dynamic had changed, and he felt like he was in charge of his little brother all the time, and, you know, just like all this stuff that was going on inside him. Who knew? You know?
Yeah.
But, and I, you know, and of course I talked to his mom, and you know things are better now. But I was so taken aback that you know, he just decided in that moment to take me into his confidence. So you sometimes just need to know that even little kids need to feel that they have a time and a place where they can offload stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're hurtling rapidly toward the end of the show, and.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to talk about coven ritual, but I think there's a real need to talk about larger group ritual. We can always revisit this topic.
Yeah, I think
we never cover a topic completely in one show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think that we need to skip over the coven type of work, and because that's more like an extended family.
Yes.
So picture the family ritual and extend it out to a slightly larger group of people, and you've got the right idea. The large groups, that's always a challenge when people get called upon to, you know, do the ritual or lead the ritual for, say, a pagan pride event or a festival that's going on, and suddenly they're like, hey, would you take care of the ritual for us?
I think one of the very first things I always tell people, if you're going to do a large ritual, remember, let's say that you're going to have 100 people or so, imagine everything you're going to do is going to have to be done by 100 people. You know, sometimes people get carried away, you know, they want to do a Beltane ritual, let's say, and, oh, everybody needs to get a seed that they can plant in their own little pot, and we're going to do this really great thing. Well, when you've got 100 people, you can't do stuff like that. You've got 100 people, if you want them to get a seed in a pot, you're going to have to make them ahead of time and hand them to everybody either as they walk in or they walk out of ritual. One of the things that I am seeing more and more in the public rituals, and I'm going to dive right into some of my pet peeves here about some of the public rituals I've been to. No gates. People just willy-nilly put down chairs anywhere, and it's a big, you know, kind of an amoeba. It's not exactly a circle. There's no sense of coming in to the circle, coming into the sacred space. People are not being saged or you know, blessed in any way or welcomed to circle in any way. When you're creating ritual for a large amount of people, one of the toughest things to do is to get them to shift from their mundane mind to now you are in a ritual space, in your ritual mind. There has to be a gateway. There has to be the illusion of a gateway, at least.
Yeah, because so a lot of times these happen in the middle of a field. But something that demarks this as a separate space has to be given so people know. You know, we always talk about keys, those things that help us to shift.
Yes.
And having some marking on the ground, having some ritual that you do as a pre-ritual to bring people into that clearly defined separate space.
And I get that you can't always sage everybody going into ritual, and you can't always hug everybody going into ritual. But maybe if it's a large ritual, you have four gates, and you put somebody in charge at each gate to bring people into ritual. Because now you've got now you've got four different places where they can come in. But they're still coming in. They're still having to walk around the circle a little bit. It does something. It prepares you. It's that preparation for being in circle together.
And it creates separateness. And that is something that people miss when they're doing ritual. And this mm-hmm. applies to all forms of ritual.
Yeah.
Is you want there to be a separateness.
Yes.
You want it to not be your mundane life. You want it to be separate and distinct.
Right. And whenever you're planning a large ritual, one of the best things I have found to do is to walk yourself through that ritual before you're going to give it to anybody else. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. Where is everybody going to stand? How is everybody going to get there? Am I going to allow chairs in the ritual or not? I was very miffed recently. I went to a public ritual. Nobody stood during the call for the quarters. Nobody stood when the high priest and priestess were calling the god and goddess. I was personally a little bit shocked. And at that point, if you're not standing and participating in the ritual, it becomes theater that you're watching. You have now become an audience, not a participant.
Yeah, and make sure when you're casting the circle, you cast the circle around the people.
Yes.
Not in front of the people.
There are many ways of doing it. You can stand in the center of circle and take your wand or your hand or whatever and cast your energy out. But there should be some sort of demarcation that the people know that they're in circle. And that best way to do that, really, is to walk around the outside of the circle so that those people know that they are in the circle. And some of these things we do for psychological reasons, psychological cues. You're coming through a gate. You're in sacred space. We are going to walk around the outside of the people so that you are in the circle. Because otherwise, if you're walking on the inside of the people who are watching, yeah, now they have just become part, audience. They're not participants.
Well, I saw a gentleman cast the circle, and he pointed the sword at the ground in front of the people, mm-hmm. so basically casting the circle and putting them on the outside.
Yes.
Now, I've also seen someone stand in the center and just rotate and cast the circle from the center of the circle,
mm-hmm.
and it was presumed that they were casting the circle around everyone.
Exactly, because they're casting it outward from the center.
Right, but when the person is pointing the sword at my feet,
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty much feeling like I'm being excluded.
Agreed.
And so you want to be conscious of the way your body language
mm-hmm.
Tells the story as well.
Yes, absolutely. After you have cast circle, and you've included everybody that's in circle, you know, there are certain people who physically cannot stand for the entire circle, and I get that. And I don't have a problem with people sitting, even just to be comfortable in circle. I don't have a problem with that. However, when the high priest and priestess or whomever is doing the callings, open their arms and look to the elements or to the gods, and they call those, you need to stand. You need to get up and participate. You need to make sure, if you are the person running the ritual, that people understand that now is the time to get up. Even if you just have to make a hand gesture with your hands up, to make them
stand. Or have a group of people seated around the circle that know they're supposed to stand, and one or two people start standing.
Mm-hmm.
Spread out around the circle, other people are going to follow. It's all that psychology you were just talking about.
Exactly. When you're getting into these big rituals, you have to keep in mind that some of it is psychology. The group mind has to come into play here. So you've hopefully got everybody standing.
Let me back up, because you actually bring up a very good point. And you started with the entry into the space.
That's right.
Because you know, then you start to develop the group mind by including them from the get-go.
Absolutely. And if you're not hitting some of these keys, you are missing key elements to public ritual. And your rituals will not be effective. They will seem lame to the people who are there, because it won't be, they won't be feeling included. They won't be feeling the energy of the ritual at all. This ritual that I went to, where everybody sat, it was energyless. It was, it really was theater. It really was just,
it was,
you know, just, why did I come? This is not a ritual, you know. And and during this ritual, I kept getting thwapped in the back of the head that, oh my God, these people, you know, they're in deep shit with the gods. This is not the way to hold a public ritual. But, you know, I, not my job, not my monkeys, not my circus, you know. just going to let it go.
Now, one other way to cast the circle, I'm going to throw this out there, and it works for a medium to a medium-sized group. It gets a little cumbersome if you've got 200 people.
Yeah.
But one of the ways, and again, it goes to including everyone, is doing the simple hand-to-hand and heart-to-heart, I cast the circle, and taking the hand of the person to your left.
Yes.
And casting the circle all the way around. Now, that can get... You know, that can get, you know, a little time-consuming if you've got, you know, 150, 200 people. It's not practical, but if you've got a medium-sized group, you know, say 50 to 75-ish is about the high end of that.
I have actually used that method and started it at each quarter simultaneously. And with a large group, and it will go, it goes quicker.
Okay. I can see that. But that gives, again, that psychology of inclusion. Because the group has now cast the circle. Instead of someone doing it for them, the group has cast the circle. And now we have, you know, we've welcomed them in. We've brought them into a separate space. You know, and then the circle itself makes it about the group consciousness to a certain degree.
Yes.
And then anything we do going forward, that is a group of people working together.
Exactly. And that is really what, because you're trying to bring all these strangers together, and you're trying to get them all to work together.
Right, and you know, they may be on disparate paths. You may have druids and asatru and heathens and Wiccan and, you know, just generic pagans, all in this group. And, you know, that's what open ritual is. And then calling the quarter. One of the things I used to do at the rituals I conducted over at Our Haven is I would give people the theme of the ritual, and I would ask them to call a quarter. And they would ask me for a script, invariably. The first time I asked a person, they would ask me for a script. And I'd tell them, no. I ain't going to bet. I would tell people, just whatever you do to call the quarter for this Sabbath, for this theme, for the ritual, call that quarter. And people would say, it's all going to be different. So?
So what?
That's what an open ritual is. And that brings all these different ideas together. All these people feel included because they're doing their own stuff. How cool is that?
Yeah. One of my pet peeves, I want to visit here quickly. I often get this from people who are attending public rituals. Well, I don't want to participate in the ritual. I'm going to stand outside circle because I don't know everybody in circle, and I don't know how their energy is going to affect me. Or I don't like somebody someone who's here who's in circle, so I'm not going to participate because I don't want to open myself to their energy. Well, let me tell you something. We go through every single day.
I've got a few words.
Yeah. We go through every single day dealing with people we may not like or whose energy may not be perfect. You know, it could be the super, it could be the supermarket clerk who had a fight with her boyfriend before she came to work, and so she's crabby. So it's no different than that. As a matter of fact, those mundane situations are probably more, I don't want to say dangerous, but more, get in more because we allow them because we're not thinking in shielding and protective terms for ourselves. But when you're in one of these large public rituals, you're not taking the energy that you're raising for the common, you know, energy working in these rituals into yourself. So let me repeat that. You're not taking the energy into yourself. It is instead
not someone else's energy.
Exactly. It is instead the collective energy running over your skin, running over your body. You're sending some energy with it as it goes around you.
And then the high priest and high priestess are doing the directing.
That's right. We are the energy cheerleaders. We're the ones collecting it, putting it into that cone or whatever, the ball, whatever we're going to use, and pushing it out.
Can I say two words?
You sure can. Just two.
Grow up.
Exactly.
Grow up.
I am so tired of that whininess because I've been hearing it for years. And if you really feel that you're that susceptible to somebody's energy, even if there's somebody there you don't care for, you shouldn't be coming to group rituals, period.
Yeah. So speaking of raising energy,
mm-hmm.
Let's talk about a couple of ways that we can raise energy and what we might do with it. Because a lot of things that I like to do in medium-sized rituals don't work after a certain point. Unless you have, you know, multiple players. But I like to do, you know, like write down something that you want to remove from your life at midsummer.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those little slips get burned, and then, you know, we see it all released. That's got some visual to it. We, you know, it's got some good theology to it. And it's something that people walk away from that ritual feeling like they're lighter. And they've actually accomplished something. But that can get cumbersome when, you know, you're passing out little pieces of paper and pencils or have one or two, four people walking from quarter, you know, starting with a quarter. You know, you got to think about logistics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you get over a certain size,
yeah.
You just got to look at logistics. The same as your,
yeah.
You know, same as your little flower pot story.
Well, my friend Robin in the chat room, she says she remembers at a previous event that we both had been to, where they had this thing where they started the Om and they went around the circle one by one and everybody had to Om, and she said it took so long, that was how they were casting the circle with Oming, and it took so long to do that. She felt sorry for the people who were at the beginning of the circle because their voices were getting sore by the time everybody else got around to it. So, yes, you have to consider how long this is going to take you. In general, I always try, no matter how large a population is going to be in the ritual, not to exceed 1 hour. I think 1 hour is excessive, honestly, for most people to be standing in one spot. And I understand that sometimes these things take time, especially if you've got a lot of people. But anything more than an hour is self-absorbed, masturbatory, you know, showing off. You have to be considerate of the attendees. And this is part of being a high priest and priestess and part of being responsible for writing the ritual and orchestrating the ritual is not abusing people. And, you know, when people are at festivals, they have other things they want to be doing. They want to come to the ritual, but they don't want to spend 2 hours standing in the sun in ritual.
Mm-hmm.
It's inconsiderate. And certainly, you know, if you have elders in your population at the festival, really unfair to them because it forces them not to be able to attend ritual, period, just because they really probably don't want to be out in the sun for 2 hours in the middle of the field with nothing to drink, can't pee, you know. I mean, most people need a break, you know. So
Yeah, I mean, the attention span of people's bottoms is mm-hmm. is where you want to mm-hmm. where you want to end this, you know.
Yeah.
So, any other you know, hot topics you want to bring up, because we are at the top of the hour.
Yeah, I see that. Group rituals, try to avoid too much tchotchke ceremonial. Gotta light this candle at exactly this moment. Gotta, you know, have this thing over here. Keep it simple. Keep it effective. Don't. Number one thing on my hit parade, if I see that you are doing a ritual and you are reading your ritual and you've given little slips of paper, and you covered this a little bit, Terry, you've given little slips of paper to people to read, no. Absolutely not. It destroys the ritual for the people who are watching. If you're really that intent that you need something said exactly the way you've written it, you need to memorize it. And if you're not... Yeah, and if you're not that good enough that you can't memorize it, then you don't need to do it. The gods know what's in our hearts. So as long as you're standing in that ritual and you're speaking from your heart and you're telling the truth and you're being open and raw, you will put on a wonderful, effective ritual.
Okay. Also, I want to bring up one final point.
Mm-hmm.
And those of you that have listened to our rituals before and or have participated with me, in fact, I said this little prayer just before we with Robin and I just before we started.
Mm-hmm.
It basically calls on the gods to give us the right words. What that means is that often what you think you're going to say is not what you say.
Exactly.
Be ready for change. Be ready to have a sense of humor for the love of all that is holy. Have a sense of humor because it ain't going to go perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you memorize everything and you work on this for 6 months and you have rehearsals and something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because the gods have a sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
The gods have a huge sense of humor. Look at the platypus, for the love of gods. I mean, that's a demonstration that the gods have a sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Be ready for goof-ups and don't freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And don't panic because, A, most people in the circle don't know what you're going to say because we don't hand out scripts, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
And second, even if everybody realizes it and we all laugh together, we're still doing it together.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have made more than my fair share of mistakes. I mean, everything from facing west and calling east, or facing north and calling south, losing my place, you know, forgetting to call the goddess. I mean, I have made every mistake that there is. There's nothing you can't fix. Number one. And one more thing I want to say, and you touched on this again. You sometimes in ritual, there will be somebody, especially these large public rituals, that the gods need to give a message to. And you will find words coming out of your mouth that you had no intention of saying. Those words are not for you. They are for somebody there. And if you're so busy reading your ritual, blah, 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 that you've written, that will not happen. And your job as a high priest and a high priestess is to serve those people in that circle, to serve your community. And part of that sometimes is delivering messages, being the conduit for the gods to speak through. Oftentimes when this happens, you will not, as the high priest or priestess, remember exactly what you said because it wasn't for you. And other times, you will remember it vividly because it also applies perfectly to your own life. The gods have a funny way of doing that.
I've gotten used to feeling that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
That time when I know that these are not my words.
Mm-hmm.
And how many times have I been on the phone with you and said, get a pen, write this down, because I'm not going to remember this.
Mm-hmm.
And I have done that. The prayer we use at the beginning of our couples workshop about creating mm-hmm. sacred space.
That's right.
That was given to me. And if I had tried to remember that and write it down at the end of our conversation, I was actually driving somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been gone.
Mm-hmm.
And those words would have been lost.
Yeah.
So sometimes you will have a message for someone else and it's not yours to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you'll get something that you want to have someone near you write down.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens in daily life, folks.
Yeah.
If you're working on, and here's my final, I'm going to give my final thoughts first tonight. I'm going to let you wrap up.
You go right ahead.
Because this all ties back into something else.
Mm-hmm.
If you've spent the time in solitary ritual, developing your relationship to the divine, and working with the gods and goddesses, working with the elements, working with spirit of land, or whatever it is that you call holy, if you've spent the time and done the work, you're going to find that daily life takes on a ritual quality in and of itself.
Yeah. Yes.
And you will have these moments of clarity. You will have these moments where, okay, right, somebody write this down because it's coming. I can tell when I'm being sent a message, when I'm channeling, not thinking for myself. And I've even been told of physical habits that change. Something I do when I'm channeling, and you start to feel this, you start to know this. You know when you're in circle that it's all going to be okay because it just is. If you follow the basics and make sure that everyone is welcome and everyone is included, however big. Whatever you say is going to be right because you have that relationship with the divine and the divine is not going to leave you twisting. Our friends don't do that to us. If you work and do the work in solitary ritual and develop that relationship will be there when you need it. Those are my final thoughts, my lady. Please tell people how to get in touch with us.
Well, you can reach Terry and myself at littlestonebridge@gmail.com. You guys heard us talk about our couples workshop. We also do, counseling and whatnot. And, any of those things, you can reach us. If you have any questions, you can check us out there. Also, the Little Stone Bridge Pathworking's Facebook page. You can reach us there. You also can reach us at the Little Stone Bridge phone number, which is 570-777-6800. You can reach Terry at his Reverend Terry Power HP Facebook page. Rev Terry Power HP. Didn't I say that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Follow me on Twitter at Rev Terry Power HP also.
Mm-hmm. There you go. And also, you can reach me on my Facebook page too, Robin Albright McKean or Robin A. McKean. And you also can reach us through the radio station, particularly if you have any compliments, comments, or complaints about anything you heard tonight or at any other time. Or you have any questions pertaining to the show, you can reach us at surn.org@gmail.com. And that's for any host that you listen to during the week. It's not just Terry and I. So whatever show you're listening to, you can always use that surn.org@gmail.com address to get in touch with us.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank
okay.
you. No, you did great. Now, your final thought.
Well, the other one thing that I really need to touch on before we go is that this is an experiential spiritual path. No matter what path you're on, if you're planning a ritual for a bunch of people or for two people, even for yourself, there should be some experience taken away from that ritual. And by experience, I mean interaction, the energy raising, the community building. There should be an experience that somebody can go away from your ritual and say, oh my gosh, I felt, I did. Okay?
Not I witnessed.
Not I witnessed. Exactly. It should be inside. There should be some change inside the people at your ritual. And so you have to take that into consideration. What experience am I aiming for them to have? And how am I going to facilitate that? How am I going to help them have that experience? Now, everybody's going to have their own experience. Even in a guided meditation, people have their own individual experiences. And that's what you want. Because, again, I have been to public rituals where nothing happened. They called quarters, they called the gods. Some people walked around in circle, said a few words, and it was over. And you're like, well, we didn't do anything together. What the hell was that? So, you have to provide an experience. One of my sharpest memories of public ritual was one of my first rituals I ever went to at Brushwood Folklore Center in upstate New York. And I don't know if anybody knows him, but Nibor, the artist, was there with Elspeth, and they were doing a ritual. And it was the first time I had ever heard a Tibetan singing bowl. And I had never seen nor heard one before. And the way he cast circle and created sacred space was with that singing bowl as he walked around. And I'm standing in circle. I'm like, what the hell is he doing? And what is that horrible noise? But I kept my mouth shut and tried to have the experience. And now every time I hear a singing bowl, I think of Nibor. And in that moment, gave me an experience to remember for my whole life. A touchstone to connect, that I'm always connected to him in that moment of that high, of him and Elspeth, in that moment of high priest and high priestess that they played, that learning, that leap of learning forward. That's our job, to give people experiences that they will remember and take home.
Absolutely.
So go out into your communities, join group rituals, provide group rituals for the people in your community. And if you remember those key things that we talked about tonight, the creation of sacred space from the moment they arrive, walking through a gate or something, right down to making sure they have an experience, you're going to be successful. That's the most important thing. Don't get hung up in reading the words right. The words will be fine. Like Terry said, the gods will guide you as far as what comes out of your mouth. Trust in that. But just make sure those people go home with a positive experience. And if you have any questions on how to do that, and if you have a specific ritual that's coming up, feel free to contact me or Terry and bounce
we'll
some stuff off us.
We'll both have that littlesungrid@gmail.com.
There you go. Absolutely. And, bounce some stuff off us. We'll be happy to give some input and advice.
All right.
Okay. That's it for me.
Thank
I guess
you,
I'm
darling.
Done now. It's hard to shut me up on this topic. We're going to have to do another show on this because, boy.
I know. We didn't even begin to cover it.
Yeah.
So,
and I love ritual. So.
It is time to wish everyone a week filled with love and with wonder. Good night and blessed be.
Good night. Blessed be all.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.